Wake up, Coastal Carolina. Wake up. This is your CCTA Wake Up Call.
Produced by the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution, free enterprise, and individual liberty.
Good morning, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. My name's Rick Hopkins, and I welcome you to our show this morning. Got a special treat for you. On Tuesday night, we had our regular monthly public meeting, which is held the third Tuesday of every month here at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern. For our public meetings, we usually bring in speakers from around the country to speak on special topics. And this month, we had a guest. His name was Hamad Jazim, a young Iraqi who was recruited by U.S. intelligence after saving an American military officer who was nearly abducted by Al-Qaeda. His intelligence information changed the battle for the Marines in the Fallujah Ramadi area by taking out one of Al-Qaeda's main operatives. He then went on to protect the Americans in the Operations Center in the Iraqi Ministry of Defense by intervening a suicide belt before it was detonated. He was known as the pro-American to the higher intelligence agencies who would report his street-level intelligence to their direct presidential advisors. People he helped called him the terrorist whisperer because he could take on the terrorists face-to-face by identifying their weaknesses. He's very highly regarded by our intelligence agencies, retired General David H. Petraeus, and Colonel John H. Burke and Jason Fowler of U.S. Army Intelligence all give him outstanding reviews. He's also the author of a book by the name of The Terrorist Whisperer. So I'm going to play to you some parts of the presentation by Hamad Jazim.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for having me here. What an honor to be here with you guys today. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Hamad Jazim. I was born and raised in Iraq. And freedom, if you ask me about what a freedom is, I wouldn't be able to tell you. Because where I grew up, we don't have a freedom. We didn't have a freedom. Freedom was very limited to where I grew up. Growing up under Saddam Hussein, you basically can't breathe, you can't move, you can't do anything. And if you do, your head most likely will be cut in no time. Saddam Hussein was such a dictator that he was watching everybody. Sometimes your own family members could watch you for Saddam Hussein. He was pretty much in control of everything. I was just a kid, and my earliest memory growing up in Iraq, I could say I had a bad and good memory growing up in Iraq. My earliest memory was basically growing up in 1991, I was just 5 years old. And during the 1991 Gulf War, when the U.S. troops came into Iraq, nobody expected the U.S. military would ever pull out of Iraq at that time. When President Bush at the time ordered the U.S. military to pull out of Iraq, when you see the U.S. troops going all the way down to Baghdad, you would think it's going to be over. So most of the people in the south of Iraq had rebels, and they stopped fighting against Saddam Hussein Ba'ath Party members, which are Saddam Hussein political party members, and his allies in the south. So they started a revolutionary, tried fighting every Saddam ally in the south, killing them, kicking them out of town, knowing that the U.S. military would never pull out and everything's going to be over and it's just a matter of time. But that's not what happened. What happened was the U.S. military pulled out of Iraq, and all of a sudden Saddam had his Republican guards who were sitting in Baghdad. They did not participate in the fight in Kuwait, and they were basically his elite fighters, sitting in Baghdad waiting for a moment for Saddam to tell him to go do anything he wants him to do. Saddam ordered Republican guards. They came out of Baghdad, and their job was to go to the south and kill everything that was alive. Kamakal Ali, Saddam Hussein's cousin, one of his vicious leaders, saying that I'm going to come over and I'm going to smash that area. Kamakal Ali killed millions and thousands of people over his career. Everybody probably heard about the Kurds with the chemical weapons back in the day. And Kamakal Ali was the leader of this. So Saddam Hussein had put two people in charge of that mission. It was Kamakal Ali and his younger son, Qusay. He was the leader of the Republican Guards at the time. As a five-year-old, the first thing I heard out of my grandfather's mouth say, run. I don't know what to run to. All I knew it was the swamps that was in the back of the house. There was about a mile to two. We start running towards the swamps, to hunt in the swamps, we ended up spending 5 nights in the swamps. We couldn't get out because the people that were captured by the Republican Guard were putting in the trucks, and they were driven straight to the mass graves. Some of the band that was captured alive, they were shot in the head, right in the village where they were. There was no sign of life except the animals in that village that night. So one day I was leaving out of middle school in Baghdad where I grew up, and I was walking home, and I was pulled over by a police patrol. A police patrol, it was a common thing back in Iraq at the time that police will rob you for your money. If you had any cash in your pocket, it will be taken. And this is how the police will eat their breakfast. This is how they buy their cigarettes. Sometimes if you smoke, there was a lot of teenagers that smoked at the time, they'll stab you and they'll take everything. You can't say anything. They're supposed to be the law, but they're kind of like, they're the first ones to break it. And once that police patrol pulled me over, the first question was, do you have any cigarettes? I said, I don't. The second question, do you have any cash? I said, I don't have any cash. So he told me to stop. He ended up coming out the car, and he asked me to search me. I did have money in my pocket. And that's what I really didn't want him to find out. Once he found out there was money in my pocket, the first thing that I see, this is a guy who was 6 foot tall, and I'm just a middle school kid. The first thing that I see is that I was being smacked down to the ground. And at that moment, I just couldn't take it. The anger inside of me couldn't hold myself, like, just from not answering back. That was the first time in my life I tried to fight back. So I end up cursing at him. And when you curse at somebody of that culture, it's a big deal. It's supposed to be to them. So I curse back at his sister. I said something about him. And he ended up getting really mad. So what he did, he put me in the police car. He drove me to the Iraqi Ministry of Interior to an unknown prison. I didn't know that prison was a political prison. It was a bunch of adults in that prison. I was thrown in that prison with every adult that was in that place. I spent about 3 weeks in that prison. I was beating every single day. They call beating at the time, they call it the disco room. I didn't know what the disco room meant at the time. I don't know what that meant until they told me that was the torture room. It had no windows and they were going to hang me from my legs. After 3 weeks, the corruption played a huge part in the Iraqi government back then. It saved my life, actually, because my dad ended up paying a lot of money to one of the biggest heads in that prison to get me out and for the report to be smashed. The report that was written, it was written that as I was a revolutionary fighter fighting against a Ba'ath Party member and attacking a police patrol. All I had in my hands that day, 4 books. That was it. I didn't know how I could be very dangerous to the government with 4 books in my hands, and I was just this big. When a report like that gets written, most likely your neck will be off in no time. Thank God my family put money together and I was out. I looked at my dad and I promised myself something. The next time I fight back, I will never stop. And I promise that someday I'll get that opportunity to fight those Ba'athists, which is the terrorists right now in Iraq. In 2003, after Iraq got liberated by the U.S. military, I opened my door and I found an American soldier standing in front of my door. I was scared if this was a trap Saddam Hussein was trying to do. I wanted to make sure these were Americans. I asked the American soldier, I said, what's your name? He said, my name is Abrat. I asked the second question, I said, where are you from? He said, I'm from Texas. Once I realized I was speaking to an American person, and it was an American accent, at that day, everything opened for me. The American soldier couldn't understand why I was so happy to see him in his front door. He kept asking me, are you happy that I'm here? I said, you have no idea. A couple months later, the United States government and the United States military have established the new Iraqi military. And guess who rented that place? I was soldier number 19 that joined the Iraqi military. I went to that recording station, and there was a tall American guy with a long beard. I think he worked for the State Department. And he was in charge of the process. I was only 17 years old. In order to join, you need to be 18. So he looked at me and he said, you're too young and I can't let you in. I turned back. I went back home. There was a guy in my neighborhood that faked IDs. He faked my ID just the same day. Same day we're talking about. He took about an hour. He faked an ID. I was 18 years old. I went back to the same guy with the same clothing. He looked at me and he said, what do you need? I said, I need to join the new Iraqi military. He said, I told you you're 17. I said, well, I'm 18 now. He looked at me and he said, "You're definitely crazy." I got in, I got my medical check done. I was happy. There was about 10 people. And I ended up being soldier number 19 later. Insurgency at the time was just starting in Iraq. All these Ba'ath Party members and Saddam allies just became terrorists. This is how Al-Qaeda came in my country. They didn't just cross the borders. They were already there. They just had to change their name.
Okay, I'm going to have to pause right here for a break to hear from our sponsors. We'll come back and hear some more from Hamid Jazim here in just a moment. Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. We're going to continue the presentation by Hamid Jazim, but he spoke for over an hour, so I'm going to fast forward to get to some of the stuff that's more relevant to today.
In 2004, I graduated with 17 members of my PSD team. Today, there's only five of us walk this earth alive. They got to most of them. I'm number five, and there's four that remains in the fight against ISIS today. The one thing that every day get me in my heart and squeeze me really hard is that every terrorist we worked hard to put behind bars between the surge of 2005 to 2007 is today free. When the U.S. troops were pulled out of Iraq in 2012, all these prisoners were handed to the Iraqi government. The Iraqi government at the time did not have the right facilities, did not even have the proper capabilities to handle these kind of terrorists. Once the U.S. troops pulled out of Iraq, within 45 days, 90% of Al-Qaeda members were out of prison. And only one attack to one of the major prisons, 600 members of Al-Qaeda was out. I mean, we're not talking about low-level terrorists. These were most dangerous terrorists that was in the battle, which took a lot of American and Iraqi blood to put behind bars and to know they were out free. They don't only have Iraqi blood in their hands, they had American blood in their hands. Some of my friends end up being buried in Arlington Cemetery. And I can look at their parents' face and say, you know what? Well, whoever killed your daughter is out today. This is, you just look at it, you put so much hard work and lives. You put so many lives in the line to make sure these guys stay behind bars. And then all of a sudden you find out they're out. And they didn't only kill thousands of Iraqis, they killed even more. Now they're out and they're free. It's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life. Because many good Iraqis died. Many children were raped. Many women were taken as a sex slaves. Many other religions, Christians, Yazidis, Ashuris, their houses was taken away from them. Their women was taken as a slaves. Their children was taken as a slaves. I mean, ISIS are no new enemy. ISIS are basically the prisoners that we put away in 2005. These are the guys you're fighting. I wish today I had my laptop with me. I didn't know you guys would have a screen. I even have the detaining file for Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, who was the leader of ISIS. Some of his main field commanders were actually sentenced to death back in 2005. Most likely, most of them were supposed to receive death penalty. And they all escaped away. One of his field commanders who became the prince of Iraq, his name is Al-Fahdawi. Al-Fahdawi came out, and I believe so far he probably have killed about 11,000 people just with his own hands, not his entourage. Every driver, every truck driver, every person that was passing by, he would have shot him or killed him. He's originally from the Anbar province. He was arrested in 2005. Based on intelligent information, he was captured, put away. We never had to worry about him. Today, he's out free, moving around between Syria and Iraq. I can't count really how many American lives this guy has taken. And today he's free. He walked out this earth and got another opportunity to do what he wants. And today, they're not even worse. They're even more dangerous than they were. Because now they have an idea who the Americans were. They have an idea who we were, and everybody, every name that was against them back in the day, they went after it. And that was one of the main reasons that my team don't remain alive today. There is only four of them still in the battle today that I talk to every single day. Every single day I look at them and tell them how much I love them and I support them. And they tell me every day that their battle is not going to hold long. They're going to lose. Every car bomb that'll blow up on them, it takes almost 40 to 50 of their soldiers. And they don't have many left. And they look at me, and they look on their American counterparts. Because these guys had American counterparts. They have American soldiers that was fighting with them side by side. But all of a sudden, they turn around and they don't find their friends anymore. Unfortunately, it is not the military fault. I know that every American veteran that I fought with in Iraq would not leave me in any way. But it was a decision that was either ordered to leave. And when they left, they couldn't do anything. It was their chain of command. Today, Iraqi army that we built together, we spent about years, about a good 5 years building an Iraqi army. We had 17 Iraqi divisions. Today, we have only 3 divisions. Most of these divisions were demolished by ISIS. We have only like an armored division, special forces division, and an infantry division. A little bit of the Iraqi Air Force. And everything else was killed and demolished. Now we have volunteers who comes from all over Iraq to fight to stop ISIS. Believe it or not, which I wish I have my technology with me today, we have 13 years olds volunteer to go to the front line to fight against ISIS, who had never been to a fight in their life. ISIS today controlled the Anbar province, where most of our Marines were heavily engaged back in the day. And Anbar province is only 30 kilometers outside of Baghdad. If they pass the Anbar province, if ISIS do get successful in passing the Anbar province, Baghdad will be gone, which means all Iraq will be gone. And those terrorists are fighting every single day to break that line. They're attacking these front lines not only with regular small car bombs, as some of the veterans see in Iraq, they attack them with tractor trailers full of explosive. And when that thing goes off, it looks like a nuclear bomb that's going out. And the lives of Iraqi soldiers that is given during those fights are tremendous. It's huge. I look at the pictures every single day and I look at my 17 men and I say, where did they go? They end up getting killed because they had to fight the same terrorist twice. And how is that fair? How is that fair then when you work hard to put somebody behind in prison, gets another chance to come out and kill you again? It just wasn't fair. At the end of the day, I'm out of speaking all over the country. And I have only one message to every American, as an Iraqi. And as somebody that battled terrorists back in Iraq, I watched my country today get ruined. But I can tell you one thing. Don't let it ruin yours. Don't let it ruin yours. The last thing you want to do is fight those guys in your soil. You don't want them here. Because they're in our country. They destroy it. And nobody has escaped out of their hand. Whether they were Muslims, whether they were Christians, whether they were Yazidis, nobody comes out of their hands. They will still get you. They kill thousands of people. And they're doing it nonstop. And there's a lot of videos that you guys are not able to watch. Because Facebook will only allow them for 5 minutes and then they will take them off. I fight against Facebook every single day, posting these videos as soon as I get them from my soldiers in the battles. I post them, but Facebook take them off. And there is no way for me to prove to every American that this is what's happening right now. They executed most of the elders that's around, most of the adults. They're now executing 10 years old. And ISIS is just a killing machine. A cancer to this world that's going to move and destroys everything. And there was a video online that was being taken off many times. ISIS right now is training a new generation of young kids, mostly born to a foreign fighters that's joined ISIS lately. They think that these are the kids going to fight America on its own soil someday. Training them with every skill they have, thinking, these are the kids that are going to make it to Europe and America someday. And I'm going to tell you, they will. Because they're not just Middle Eastern kids. They look like you. They look like you. Because their parents were not Middle Easterns. They were either Russians. They were from Europe. ISIS had people from all over the place. and some of their parents have passports to get back to those countries. So they don't have to really do it like 9/11. They don't. All they have to do is come to this country and enter it properly, because their parents probably had this country passport in their hands. And yes, there's a lot of American passports with ISIS. There's a lot of British passports. There's a lot of Swedish passports. There's a lot of Belgium, Germany, every country, name it, they have it. The second highest rate right now of the ISIS fighters fighting amongst ISIS right now, and nobody would believe it, is Australia. Who would expect Australia to be an extremist country? I would expect them from Saudi Arabia. I'd expect Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, any of these countries, Qatar, but actually it's not. To look at the rates, Australia was one of the biggest numbers. England was one of the second ones. Germany was really high, and it keeps going. So they're getting people of color, they're getting people of different ethnicity, because they feel this is the future fighters. Since I got to this country, the one thing that I enjoyed about this country is the liberty. And I watch it, and I look, and I have a child here. Well, she was born and raised here. And I look at her every single day, and I'm like, I escaped the other side of the world to come here so I can give my family a good safe life. I did everything in my hands that I can do to protect these troops coming home. But for them to come here and do it, I'm like, that's impossible. I don't want to watch that happen. I supported whoever out there that's willing to make the decision and change it. Because I'm not here against a particular president or anything. But when you pull troops out of Iraq and leave those terrorists go, what do you expect? Do you expect them to sit down and wait for you? And if you don't fight them in your soil, they're going to try to come here, because their dream, and if you hear them talking, their biggest dream is to come fight you here, not down there. That has been their dream. And they want that dream really bad. They're training every single day. And right now, there's not much pressure on them. The pressure is on the Iraqis. They're actually establishing themselves. I just heard today there was troops on the ground, and some of the troops are going to fight some of these ISIS. We need to fight these guys as soon as possible. And there was no time left for us. That is my message to you and to every American, whether they were Democrat, Republican, members of the Tea Party, conservative. That is my message to you.
Wow, what an important message. We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I hope you've enjoyed that important message from Hamid Jassim. And if you want to find out more about him, you can go to theterroristwhisperer.com. And if you want to find out more about CCTA, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's all our time for the day. Please join us again next week.